Hey everybody, welcome to the True Crime Squad. I'm Christy Brower, here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Katie Weaver. Hey, Katie.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going good. It was weird to not be on live at 6.
Yeah, I know. I startled myself about 5 till and went, oh, what? Oh, no, never mind. We're 7 on Wednesday. We're 7 on Wednesday.
No, the dog didn't mind, but, you know.
yeah, mine didn't either. But hey, everybody, welcome. Nice to see you all, whether you're here live or after the fact. We appreciate you all very much. And yes, we did hit a big milestone today, which was 7,000 subscribers.
Yes.
Which is really exciting. Our goal during this trial is to get to 10,000. So,
yeah,
you know, anytime you want to share us out to your friends, we'd sure love that, because we just want to get bigger. We appreciate it so much.
And a lot of you have done that, and we appreciate you very much.
We do appreciate you so much for that.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been able to be, you know, watching the trial, that's why we do these at night, and also to just kind of break down some of the things that happened and talk about some of the questions we have and some of the what the hells and... And thank you all very much for the congrats. Yeah, we're excited.
Yeah. You guys are the best.
I'm going to start out with what the hell with Pryor and Chad being in the dark all day.
Yes. Actually, before we do that, can we talk about the watch party?
Oh, yes, we can. My apologies.
No, you're good. I just... I don't want to forget. So it is the watch party tonight. So normally that's not that big of a deal because, you know, we're not, you know, watching 8 hours of Court every day. But we're not going to stray away from our regular things. So it is the watch party tonight. So that happens at 8:15 Mountain. If you are a part of our membership on YouTube, then you probably already have received a notification. But this is how it works. We're going to watch. We always watch on Netflix. Because most people have Netflix. I know not everyone does, but we're watching Unlocked, a jail experiment. This is the first episode. This is really interesting stuff they're doing. And frankly, I don't think we talk about incarceration around here probably enough. We've talked about the death penalty a lot. But anyway, so it's Unlocked, a jail experiment, episode 1. So you just go to the live stream and open it up and our chat will be going. So we'll be live, but this is what you'll see. You won't see us. You'll just see this meme right here, or meme, background, post. And so background, you'll watch on your own device, but we'll all chat together. That's how we do these. And it's a ton of fun. So I hope you guys, if you are a member, you can do that. If you're not, you can go over to YouTube and do that if you want to. It's super cheap. And it's just one more way to interact with us during the month. And this is a fun one. So it's not Daybell-esque. We were going to do Mike Tyson this month since he just passed.
OJ Simpson.
Mike Tyson. Lord. Mike Tyson is not passed. He's getting ready to fight. Never mind on that. OJ Simpson. Where am I? But the documentary on him is so long that we will do it another day. But this day, I just think it's too long for you and me. So we're doing something else.
Yeah. We'll do that when we're not also watching Court every day. And, you know, everybody needs to be able to get some sleep around here.
Mm-hmm. But yes, carry on with the Chad going 50 Shades of Dark.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was super weird. Yeah. This is what we saw all day. And, you know, and we're pretty sure it's because they had all the blinds up. The jurors asked to have the blinds up so that you could see outside. And it was a beautiful blue sky, clouds kind of, you know, white puffy clouds kind of day. Some people said it looked like the clouds from The Simpsons. It was just a beautiful day in Boise. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is that then, yes, Chad and Pryor were just backlit as silhouettes the entire day. And you can see in this image that, you know, this is a four different views of Zoom over Zoom in the courtroom and everything else looks normal. And then there's Chad and Pryor in outer darkness at 9999.9999 dark.
Yes.
In purgatory. We don't know. It just, it's weird. Like it's a strange commentary that isn't meant to be a commentary, but it's a commentary.
So funny. And I did borrow this graphic from the Docket on Twitter. If you don't follow the Docket and you're on Twitter, you should. They're amazing.
They are. But that was weird watching the whole thing in there. Plus, also a good share of the day, we couldn't hear anything that Pryor said unless he was standing at the podium because he was not, didn't have his mic on, wasn't talking into his mic. And I guess the judge couldn't tell or didn't care, but you know, there would just be dead silence. And then the judge would say, "What's your reasoning?" And you'd realize he had made an objection, but you couldn't hear it at all.
First thing this morning, he got called out for not using his mic. And then for the rest of the day, I think the judge just went, "Fuck it. What do you do with this person?" This. Yeah.
Right. So it was odd. It was just, it was odd. The whole, all, this whole day was odd, I think.
Wasn't it? Everything just felt off.
It was a little different. So we started out the day with Detective Chuck Consitis. He is a Rexburg detective, Rexburg City detective. He's been with the Rexburg Police Force for forever. And his job...
Like since we were teenagers.
Yeah, like since we were teenagers. Which is a long time, because I'm old. and you're slightly less old. so Consitis' job was to go through all of the financials of the various players. So Lori, Alex, Chad, Tylee, and JJ. He went all through their financials, which is very dry information, but it's also really important information. Because it lays out a timeline. And like Consitis said, looking at the financials in a missing person's case tells you a lot. Because you can tell immediately when someone is no longer living, when all of their use of their, you know, their finances stops. So let's see. We're not going to go through it all, you know, like, all the accounts and all the stuff we talked about. We're going to hit some highlights. So Consitis talked about cell phone bills, bank statements, and letters from the IRS that all were in a post office box in Sugar City, Idaho, which is a little town just outside of Rexburg. And Lori owned a P.O. box there.
Which is really interesting because Chad has to have had a P.O. box there too. I'm guessing that's why she went there, because people on that road do not receive mail. It's a really busy road. And on the Salem Highway where Chad lives, lived, there is no mail service. You have to go into Sugar City to the post office to the P.O. box. So I'm guessing that's why Lori had one too there.
I assume so. Because I mean, it was weird to have one in Sugar when he could have had one, she could have had one in Rexburg.
Yeah.
If she was going to have a P.O. box. There were about 100 pieces of mail there that were addressed to Lori, Charles Vallow, and Alex Cox. So he found a lot of things there that actually helped to identify their banks, their cell phones, a bunch of stuff like that, because the bills were locked up in that P.O. box. So he went through tons and tons. I mean, at one point, Nate actually described the paperwork that that Wood brought forward as a as an exhibit as an entire ream of paper, if you can imagine. All through all of these different bank accounts, showing the history of their deposits and transfers and debits. And it showed a lot of things like Tylee's regular activity on her own bank account. that's where her death benefits were going from her dad, Joe Ryan.
Yeah.
And she was spending money about every day, you know. She was paying for her Jeep and her phone bill, and she was buying gas and food and various things. Up until September 1st. And at that point, Lori changed the bank account where Tylee's money went from Tylee's account to her own account.
Yeah.
And this happened, you know, just over a week prior to when we know that Tylee was killed. So she went from having control of her money and having access to her money to not having any money.
Yeah.
He said her last in-person transaction was at McDonald's in St. George, Utah on September 1st.
Yeah.
So that was likely when they were driving from Arizona to Rexburg.
Yeah.
Tylee lived a very short amount of time in Rexburg.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Her ending balance in her account was $0. Lori took even her last 10 bucks and transferred it to her own account. It's just so gross. And it's so sad. You see how active Tylee is and how she's growing up and she's, you know, managing her own money and figuring all this stuff out. She just is erased.
Yeah. Yep.
It was really
and because smart. She was ripped away from her friends and the rest of her family. She'd been working for Summer's husband. Yeah. And, you know, she was ripped away from all of them, put in a town where she knew absolutely nobody and was promptly murdered where nobody would miss her.
Yeah.
It's really, really sad.
It really is. It's sad. And it's just, it's a great example of why we are here doing what we are doing.
Yeah.
Because there needs to be some justice for this. So Consitis, you know, continues through this giant stack of paperwork. One thing that he noted is that after the deposit change happened right before Tylee died, $7,465 of Tylee's benefits went into Lori's account. So that's what she was receiving after his death. Then there was the Social Security benefits that JJ was receiving from Charles's death. And that money was always going into Lori's account. And the total amount of that after JJ's last proof of life was $7,835. So they're showing, you know, basically the profit off from the death of the children. Really important to get it down to those numbers, because we know how money motivated Lori was in this situation. So it was important to see this. One of the things that was happening, though, after Tylee's death is that there was money being transferred into her account and then being immediately Venmoed out or transferred back out. So Lori was still creating transactions in this account, but they're very different than Tylee's activity. Detective Consitis said it was very easy to tell that this wasn't Tylee. For one, Tylee did very little shopping online. Almost all of her purchases were in person. And after her death, money would be transferred into her account and then mostly was used online or Venmoed out.
Yeah.
And it was just basically the opposite of the way that Tylee used her account.
Yeah.
So there was these two purchases at Costa, let me say it 1,000 times more, for old John Pryor, not Costa Vida, Costa Vida, which is kind of like it's a little bit like a Chipotle. It's a burrito-like place that we have around here. And there were charges for Costa Vida in Rexburg on September 17th. Uh-huh. And then there was one for in Ammon, Idaho, which is a little, which is a suburb of Idaho Falls where I live, uh-huh. on October 7th.
Yeah.
And Consitis made it clear that he believed that those charges were both done by Lori. Uh-huh. That someone was using the card to make it look like Tylee was using the card.
Yeah.
And apparently whoever those people were, they really like Costa Vida. And I mean, Costa Vida has good food. We like Costa Vida too.
I'm not going to let them ruin Costa Vida for me. I'm not.
Well, don't worry about it, because it's apparently they were going to someplace called Costa Vida, if you were John Pryor.
Or Costa Vida, he said a couple of times.
Costa Vida. Yeah, he kept saying it wrong. Both. Mm-hmm. And I think he does it on purpose. Mm-hmm. I think the mispronunciation of things is on purpose. And I think it's really stupid. I just don't get why. So some of the times that money was Venmoed out from Tylee's account at this time was Venmoed to Colby. Uh-huh. Now we know that Tylee used to send Colby money here and there. Colby was young, married, has a special needs child, sometimes needed some help. And Tylee had a pretty good chunk of money coming in. Uh-huh. And so she would send him money here and there. Uh-huh. So we know that Lori was using Tylee's phone to text Colby occasionally, and then also to send him a little money here and there. I remember one was for his birthday.
Yeah.
To, again, make it look like Tylee was still alive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Carrie says, I'm surprised he didn't say Costa Rica. Right?
I would have been kicked out of the courtroom.
Is Pryor dyslexic? I don't think so. To my knowledge, he is not. But it's like he has this real daughtery grandpa, I can't do technology shtick that he puts forth in these hearings. And somehow he, there's another use of, PWAP, Pryor with asinine pronunciation, because it is, he does it all the time, and it's just, it's weird to me. And yeah, Colby has a child with cerebral palsy, doesn't he?
I believe that
his little girl has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right, Colleen says, but Lori didn't need to eat, right? Who was eating the Costa Vida? Probably not Alex. That
translated goddess. What?
Right. Yeah. Right. And Paula, there's a question. That's a good point, that he's showing his prejudice by deliberately mispronouncing the name of the restaurant because it's Mexican food, which could be. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he's done it with other words too. And it just, well, and the thing, the way that he refuses to differentiate between text messages, instant messages and emails, and he calls them all emails until Wood and the judge have been just flat pissed off at him. So he was doing some of that. He wasn't really objecting much during this stuff, and it appears to me that he is thinking that this is all just for the good for him, because this is all still basically stuff about Lori and Alex. But the thing that I think that he just maybe just is not getting is that there are indications in these financials of the preparation for the children's deaths. Like, she was making changes to their finances in preparation for them not being around anymore. And so she's doing that. And then the kids disappear. He marries her. And then the kids turn up in his backyard. So I don't care if his...
All the while telling people that Lori doesn't have kids.
Or that kids.
Her daughter, she had a daughter who died, or, you know, a while ago, or, you know, things like that. Buying into all of it and telling the lies along with her.
I just don't think that this is having the impact of proving Chad's innocence that he thinks that it is.
I know.
Because
I
it's so gross. I mean, seeing this, you can see... Not only was were these murders premeditated, but they, you know, especially at least for Tylee, went to a lot of work to make it appear as though Tylee was still living when she wasn't.
Yeah. Absolutely. Then we one of the things that they showed this morning was Lori buying a plane ticket for Chad.
More than one, yeah.
Yeah. The one thing that got me this morning was when he said to Consitus, I guess it was this afternoon, but when he said to Consitus that, why did you put, he was asking about some travel of Chad's, and he was saying, did this have anything to do with Charles Vallow's murder? And he said, no. Well, why would it be on this timeline then? And he said, was it for work? Was he traveling? What was this for? And he said, well, we don't know. Well, was this just, did this actually need to be here? Or did you just put this here to get a reaction out of the jury?
Yeah.
Gross.
It's got an immediate, objection that for was being sustained. Argumentative and, yeah. You know, but he was just being shitty. But the airfare stuff is really interesting. These people did a lot of flying, for one.
Yeah, they did.
A lot of flying. Oh, well, but one of the other things. It's
cheap to fly from Idaho Falls to Mesa.
Right, it really is. Cheap. There's, like less than there's a very cheap flight. Yeah. But there was very interesting, you know, we talked yesterday about Chad calling Valley of the Sun Mortuary to get a quote. Well, there's also then on the same day that Chad made that phone call, there is a credit card charge of Lori's to Valley of the Sun Mortuary. So, you know, some validation there of old Chad Dayball, his Uncle John Myron Dayball, you know.
Iowa or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of flying back and forth between Idaho Falls and the Mesa Phoenix Airport. Lori purchasing plane tickets for Chad from Idaho Falls to Phoenix in March of 2019. At another time, and this was before the murders, this was during, you know, when they were just having an affair and hadn't killed anybody yet. She also flew him to Houston for a weekend when she was there bringing JJ or to visiting JJ or something to do with when Charles was living there.
Yeah.
And she flew Chad. You know, these are Lori's credit cards, but you know who was paying those bills? That was Charles. Yeah. Flew him to Houston to see her for a weekend. Another time she flew between Mesa and Provo, Utah, which I'm going to assume is because Chad met her there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evidence in here of their affair.
Yeah.
The apartment application for the Pioneer Road apartment. Lori had written on the application her daughter had graduated at 16 and was too young to live alone, but was coming to attend school at BYU Idaho. So she was coming to live here so she could go to school. There's the start of that lie.
Yep. Well, and in Lori's trial, they did bring a provost from BYU Idaho up on the stand who said,
yeah,
we have absolutely no record of Tylee. She never applied to go to school here. She was certainly not a student here. We have no record of this person whatsoever. That was just a part of the lie. There was absolutely no truth to it at all.
Yeah. Then he looked through Alex's financials and he talked about how Alex had a job where he got 2 to 3 paychecks a month, that he was, you know, paying all of his bills and credit cards and stuff right up until he got a loan for $21,000 on August 8th. And shortly after that, he quit his job.
Yeah.
And then he never had any income again.
Yep.
And listed on the reason for the loan was medical reasons. But we know that was not true. But he basically quit his job, got that loan, and moved to Rexburg with her and never had a job again.
Yeah.
A big change in his behavior and in his financial behavior.
Yeah, huge.
He stopped paying all of his bills.
Yeah. He didn't need
which
to.
Which was pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah. He didn't think he needed to.
Nigh on to the second coming and being a translated being, guys. You don't pay right. Bill, that's mundane. That's for lowly people.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So between August 10th and October 24th, Alex made 46 transactions for gun-related purchases. Yeah. He bought a bunch of guns. He bought a bunch of ammunition. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty hot debate because, you know, everyone's wondered for a while, or, you know, there were questions for a long time about how was Alex able to buy a gun because of his conviction of assaulting Joe Ryan.
Yeah.
And it turns out that was a withheld judgment. And so he was allowed to still own guns. Mm-hmm. We had to have a little motion in limine hearing outside of the jury at one point, because John Pryor, who has been told he is not allowed to bring up Joe Ryan's death anymore, or anything about Joe Ryan or the attack on Joe Ryan from Alex, he wanted to know how he could possibly question Detective Consitis about all those guns. Uh-huh. if he couldn't ask him about, you know, if Alex could or couldn't own a gun.
He was very concerned about that, which honestly, yeah. Like, obviously he could. He wasn't buying guns at gun shows or someplace that you might be able to get around that. He was going to Cabela's and the other gun shops in Idaho Falls. He was buying guns from gun shops. Of course he mm-hmm. had to be legal, or they would not have been able to sell to him. But that was a weird point that he was... It was a real judge. I'm trying to make sure I follow the rules. Only...
And then he immediately didn't follow the rules. Yeah. When he started his cross-examination of Consitis, he immediately jumped right into the gun thing and, you know, asked if Alex, if there was any reason why Alex couldn't own guns. Yeah. And Consitis said, well, there was a charge, but he was allowed to own guns. And then Pryor tried to jump right into it, even though the judge told him he couldn't, and Wood objected and stopped him. Uh-huh. But right in that situation, another situation occurred. And Carrie, you can definitely help us with this. But as he walked up to the podium to start his cross-examination of Consitis, he said something like, well, if I'd known that, I would have been prepared, and called Rob Wood a smartass,
uh-huh.
is what we've heard. And Carrie, you were there. You witnessed it. It's not being reported by East Idaho News. It's definitely being minimized.
Mm-hmm. So Lauren from Hidden and Carrie are both saying that is exactly what they heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that immediately caused a sidebar in which they all went out in the hall and there was some yelling in the hall.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Pryor was in some deep shit.
Well, he was mad because Wood, rather than say at the end of lunch or before they went to lunch that he didn't have any questions left for this witness, he waited until they got back, had that motion in limine, and then when it was his turn, he went right up to the podium and said that the state has no more questions at this time.
Yeah. And he was mad at him
prior because he would have had all of lunchtime to be prepared for this witness. He still did, really, but I was shocked and kind of surprised. I'm sure Pryor was too, but
yeah,
but you can't be calling the prosecutor a smartass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And getting away with it. That was stricken.
That was, yeah, that was definitely stricken. And, well, it wasn't, though. It was all played off. The judge said that they went out and had that sidebar mm-hmm. because there was a concern that someone was recording inside the courtroom. Mm-hmm. Now, no one actually that we know of saw anyone get accused or anything happen. It was almost like that was the cover story for the actual situation, which was the thing with
right, because that happened.
Crier calling Wood a smart ass. So it was very weird. Yeah. Right. And yeah, boys, they came back and said that there was a concern that someone may have been recording, but that they that turned out to be there was nothing, they couldn't find anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a concern but not confirmed. So they sort of just glossed over that whole situation by saying that, which was kind of odd. But I think they were trying to make sure that the jury didn't, I mean, that would be a big deal for the jury to have heard that.
Yes. Yeah. You know, honestly, Pryor, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. But, you know, the prosecution said yesterday in their order, you know, in their application that they ended up doing that hearing on yesterday, that they were worried that Pryor was trying to cause a mistrial.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pretty good animosity going on here. It has been for 4 years, but
oh yeah. I mean, see it. How many times has the defense, well, Pryor and Mark Means in the past tried to get Rob Wood thrown off this case. So there's some bad blood there.
Which is so crazy because Lindsay Blake is killing it. She's got plenty of good help. And at the time she had Rachel Smith, who was an absolute wonder. Right. So all the while we're like, I don't want to see Rob Wood off of this case, but if it happened, it sure wouldn't end the case. It wouldn't be the end of the world in any way.
It's just, does it give the jury some doubt in the, in the prosecution, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, that all happened, which was pretty wild.
Totally. Carrie said she also parked next to Pryor. And gave him a good wave when she went in, but he ignored her. And then later in the day, he stared her down a couple of times to catch her eye. Oh, I've had that eye. It is creepy AF.
It is creepy. Yes, he did that with us many times in Fremont County, and it's very odd.
Uh-huh. That's true, Amber. There were a few hearings in Fremont where in between and stuff that Pryor's always trying to buddy up to everybody and get them to visit with him. And there were some times we saw Wood and Pryor visiting and laughing together. That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he just tried to get him thrown off the case again. And I would imagine Wood is pissed off at him. Sick of this mess, you know?
Mm-hmm. Considus. Detective Considus is a gigantic teddy bear. He's an enormous man. There's two detectives on the RPD that I can think of that are both really, really big humans, Considus and Hope. Mm-hmm. And Considus is like 8 freaking feet tall. He's huge.
Yeah.
And to see Ray Hermosillo stand next to him is funny because Ray's a little guy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But this case has broken his heart. Every time he talked about JJ today, there were tears. It just ripped my heart out.
Yeah, he teared up a lot. Talking about, you know, the connection between like the timeline between various financial things and then how near this was to the death of either of these children. Yeah. You know, he really brought it into a more personal sense of it was very clear that these children were no longer living on this planet because of the financial records, which was important. It's important to understand how they know when the kids died, you know, and there are a lot of different ways they know, but definitely this was a very important one. Mm-hmm. So then, the cross-examination with Pryor and Considus was a lot of it just extremely pointless, but mostly just pointing out, you know, that this wasn't Chad's fault. The biggest one being the he went real hard on the Costa Vida visit, one of them.
Yeah.
And about how he knew who was there and he wanted to know why they hadn't done GPS and all this stuff. And Considus is like, that's not my part of this investigation.
Right.
That's somebody else's job. I'm not in charge of GPS. I'm in charge of the financial stuff. And he got real nasty and sideways with Consitus for a little bit.
Kept at, well, why haven't you done this? Well, why haven't you done that? And he's like, that's just not my role. I wanted more objections there than we got, to be honest.
I know, I did too. But I still wonder if they're just kind of letting Pryor go off a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because he was really rude to Consitus, and here's this guy who's, you know, cried on the stand over the deaths of these kids, and then he's nasty to him and going at him about things that he obviously knows. This is not an investigation that was all done by one freaking person. It wasn't even done by one jurisdiction of police, you know? Uh-huh. So that was pretty interesting. Uh-huh. And then we got this guy. Cracked me up, honestly. The way he talked, he was so official. Uh-huh. FBI forensic accountant Michael Douglas.
Douglas of the FBI.
Yes. The way he said it all was very interesting. So yeah. He also, he's a forensic accountant, and he helped with all of this financial stuff. Uh-huh. The first thing he said that blew me away and blew us all away is that he built a spreadsheet of all of the bank accounts that he audited through this process. And it was 80 bank accounts, you guys.
80. How many accounts do you have?
Two or three, probably. Sketchy at all, right? 80 bank accounts. Insane. And you can't tell me there wasn't moving money around and doing various things to be confusing when you had 80 bank accounts.
Or just being sketch in general.
Yeah, that was really weird, but he was very knowledgeable about the case. He did a lot of the other electronic investigation stuff too, and so he just kind of took everything that Consitus said and put it in a very precise timeline for each individual person about when all of these things occurred, including the death dates of each individual person, which was really, I thought it was really powerful. I hope it was powerful for the jury, because it just took all of the information that Consitus gave and then narrowed it down to all of the key points of this is when this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. Mm-hmm. Yes, he had these timelines. There was a fraud timeline. There were different timelines for various crimes that he was investigating, which was really interesting. Yeah. And he had labeled them all. It was really good.
Yeah.
And I think that it helped a lot just to see why there are so many different ways in which all of this connects back and connects to why they know what happened to the kids. One interesting thing was that he could prove that money was sent to Colby from Tylee's Venmo on October 10th from Kansas City, Missouri. And they could then, you know, go back and prove that Lori was in Kansas City, because they could prove the flight. However, Tylee was not in Kansas City because there was no flight. Just things like that I felt like were super helpful. There was, yes, the grand theft timeline. And that was the timeline about all of the Social Security payments. So he had a table of the Social Security payments, a grand total of, and this included the payments to Lori for Charles's death, of $22,545 went into Lori's account after the deaths of the children. And so she was committing grand theft from the Social Security Administration for Charles and then also JJ and Tylee. He talks about when Tammy's life insurance was increased, which was only a few weeks before she was killed.
Yeah.
Chad was doing a lot of ignoring during this process. He was scrolling on a computer, just not really paying attention. They started to talk about Chad and Tammy's financial history just very briefly. And then that was when court ended today. So that's where they're going to start. But a few things of note that I think, some of these things we knew, some of them I think I don't remember them necessarily. But so it was September 8th that Tammy's life insurance was increased. He had documentation of prepaid cell phones that were done by Chad beginning in October of 2019.
Mm-hmm. We also learned, and I don't know if I missed this in Lori's trial or we didn't hear it, but the Lori had a $2 million life insurance policy on herself. Mm-hmm. In Colby's name.
Yes. And he and Douglas, you know, had found that to be of concern. Mm-hmm. Or of note, because it was only in Colby's name and not in Colby, Tylee, and JJ's names.
Remember
Avow, the website that Chad was writing for, the Christopher mm-hmm. Parrott website, where a lot of the preparing of people were at, and this was a paid to participate kind of website, and Chad worked for them.
Well, it has a paid side and a not paid side.
Right.
But all the Chad stuff was behind a paywall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And on November 1st, he received his final check from that website and resigned. Mm-hmm. They also talked about the trip to Knott's Berry Farm, where Chad bought tickets to go there for himself, 5 kids and in-laws, and a ticket for Lori. Mm-hmm. But let's see. So what Chad did right before he got arrested, this is important. Chad transferred $1,000 to 3 of his kids. Uh-huh. When the kids were missing, he sent $1,000 to 3 of his kids on the day that they announced the kids were missing. Isn't that odd? Uh-huh. Why would he immediately start sending his kids money when that comes out?
And only 3 of them.
Yeah. So then on January 3rd of 2020.
Well, of course, the youngest was still on his mission at that point, to be fair.
That's right. Yeah. There were 2 money transfers on January 3rd of 2020 to his middle son of $1,500. Mm-hmm. Then on March 6th, when Lori was extradited from Hawaii to Idaho, when he came back to Idaho, Chad sold his 2 vehicles to his 2 daughters mm-hmm. for $200 for each. Mm-hmm. And then on June 9th, 2020, when the bodies were discovered, Chad had transferred $8,000 to his children. Mm-hmm. So he transferred $10,000 from the Spring Creek book account to his personal account on June 9th. Mm-hmm. And then he moved $8,000 to Seth's account, mm-hmm. and he sent $8,000 to Joseph and Emma.
Uh-huh.
And then he also transferred $8,000 to Garth from a savings account. Mm-hmm. And so not those transfers were made at $9,000 in the morning.
Yeah. Not to mention that there was $9,000 in cash in the house.
Right.
In Mark's bedroom. Yeah.
There were so much information that indicated to me, mm-hmm. and I think to a lot of us, that he had was preparing for this. He mm-hmm. knew it was going to happen. He knew exactly that he needed to get his money spread out to his kids before he was arrested on that day, because like he and Emma agreed, he wasn't going to be coming back. Mm-hmm. Pretty wild stuff. I think it's a good indicator that the jury needs to hear over and over and over again.
Right.
That he was preparing, knowing mm-hmm. he was headed away.
Yeah. Wasn't returning. Ever,
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
he took money from his kids for his cars. He sold each car for $200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of bizarre. Because he can just go to the DMV and do a title transfer, you know?
Right.
You don't have to sell things for, you know, there doesn't have to be a sale price when you're transferring from parent to child.
Mm-mm.
So he didn't have to do that. I don't know why he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, one of the weird objections today from Pryor, when I think it was actually Consitus, I'm not sure. One of the witnesses today was asked to describe like what Chad, you know, what Spring Creek Publishing was. And he said, well, you know, it's a publishing company that Chad writes and publishes books through. That seems like a reasonable answer, right? Prior objection. That misrepresents. And Wood is like, how? Isn't that what a publishing house does? And the judge was like, yeah, no, you can do that on cross. We're not doing this.
It's like, so then he asked him so that because he wanted him to say, not only did he write books, but he also did public speaking and he did podcasts. He wanted, that was very important that he get that out there.
I was just only disappointed that Rob didn't call them Chad's dumb books. Come on, Rob.
Come on.
Archibald did it. You can do it too.
But isn't it odd that he gave money to three of his children on the day that the police announced that Tylee and JJ were missing?
Right. What was that money about?
What was that $1,000 for to three of his children? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very
misrepresents that Chad has a job.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, all of the financial stuff that he did was strange. It definitely was.
Yeah.
Right, GSI. Well, you know, I mean, did he love Lori, or was this just about money and power and sex? I don't know, you know, or did he always want Tammy out of the way? I think that he was a philanderer and a shitty husband. But when he got the chance to have Goddess Lori, that just changed everything. I don't know that he always wanted Tammy out of the way, but Chad's like the chess captain getting the head cheerleader. Like, this is the story that you see play out between the two of them.
He wasn't the captain, but okay. Probably not.
He was a kid on the chess team who got the head cheerleader. You can see it in him, in the way he wrote about Lori and the way he talked about Lori, in his mind, like, he got the hot chick in the situation. And I think that Chad is an extremely insecure person. And I also think that Chad has always really craved recognition and needed a lot of outside validation from other people. And Lori gave that to him in a way that, you know, took him from just a jackass to a monster.
But remember too, Tammy's death was prophesized by Chad. He started prophesizing that in late 2018, beginning of 2019.
Right.
That's and true. That whole year he had told many people that he had these visions that Tammy was going to die. And then Tammy died and it made his prophecy true.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can discount the ego in him, that he liked seeing his prophecies come true as well. I really, really want to see Christopher Parrott on the stand. God, I hope they call Christopher Parrott. And I really, really, really hope that they made it into the back room of that Avow site to get all of Chad's writings.
Yeah.
Because he had released a writing when just a few days after Tammy died. And it's the train station essay that he wrote. And one of these days we'll go through it. It's thick as hell. But they emailed half of it out to all the Avow people trying to get them to come and subscribe to Chad, you know, on their site so that you could read the other half of it. Nellie's at my door. She's out there with that wand toy. Can you believe that?
Oh, anyway. No. You still haven't thrown it away.
An idiot. Anyway, but so they sent out half of it. So I have scoured the internet for the other half of this letter and I cannot find it. Everybody has the first half. Nobody has the second. We'll bring you that letter here in a day or two on a day that court's dry and there's not a lot to talk about. Like,
today.
We'll bring that letter. But Christopher Parrott is a man that lives in Rigby. Hold on.
Yeah, Christopher Parrott owns the website, the LDS Avow, which is another voice of warning. They're a hate group. They attacked us the first time we had Pride here in Idaho Falls. I was on the committee for that, and Aval really went after us, and we were scared that they were going to show up and cause problems at Pride. They didn't actually, but they were threatening some things. And they did a lot of other stuff where, yeah, they had a free site and a Facebook group where you could get some of their information, but it's a lot of white supremacy, hate for other religions, hate of the LGBT community. There's the stupid one, Katie, stuff like that. It was a very, they're a very scary group. And Christopher Parrott owns that website, owns that group. And Chad was, Katie's dying laughing with her mic muted, I think. Anyway, Chad was writing for that group, and Christopher Parrott was a very vocal supporter of Chad right up until he was arrested for the children's murders. And then he came out all contrite and made a big apology, like a public apology on the news, that he was so sorry, that he had no idea that his friend Chad would be involved in something like this. And he had defended him because he fully believed in him. And they're all a part of that same preparing a people group, the prepper Mormons in this area that were getting ready for the second coming and building the tent cities and like trying to follow Chad. And he was a very public supporter of Chad right up until he was arrested.
Hi guys.
How you doing? Did you take care of that problem?
Like, I kicked them back out. They came in and they were so loud and wild, and then Nick Nelly tore my headset off. I don't know if you guys saw that, but, anyway, so I kicked him back out, so we'll see. But I now have the Toy of Doom in here, so I've got to take it out to the garbage can. That's all. But yeah, Christopher mm-hmm. Parrott, guys. If Christopher Parrott's on the stand and he reads some of that shit from Mayvow, it's going to blow your minds. Yep.
Yeah, it's wild. Yes, and that's true, Joelle. Christopher Parrott's daughter and son-in-law did do an interview on Mormon Stories, mm-hmm. the Mormon Stories podcast. Go do a Google search for that and watch it. Very interesting. But this is, if you go look up LDS Aval and learn about what they are, you will mm-hmm. learn a lot about the level of hate mm-hmm. that there was in this group for anyone who is not white, straight, and straight. LDS. Really scary
yep.
stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, he was a real jerk right up until the kids were found.
Oh yeah, he was on East Idaho News on Facebook posts, just fighting it out with people right and left, and just telling everybody what jerks they were and what losers they were and how dare they. And yeah, he was really something. He wasn't the only one. So was Emma's husband Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Murray, I think. He was belligerent to people online, clear up yeah. until the day where the kids were found. And then, boy, everybody just shut the hell up.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Are there any normal people living in the area that Lori and Chad live? Yes, there are. I mean, it's not everybody mostly. Here by any means. They are a very small minority, but they're here. And they're just a little further underground now because mm-hmm. of this situation.
That question, really, I loved it. Yeah, they hate anyone south of Yukon, right? Because they wanted their tent city to be in Yukon,
mm-hmm. which is another little suburb just north of Idaho Falls, where I live.
Yeah,
it's a tiny little town that's mostly just a farming community. Mm-hmm. Right, Julie Rowe was the same. She was yeah. totally Team Chad right up until the kids were found.
Yes, yeah, and then immediately she's like, "I told everyone." The Chad's terrible. Oh.
Yeah, no, she didn't. She was kissing his ass right up to the arrest.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what we have from today. It was a very different day in court, and we're going to see some of those days where we get some really mm-hmm. explosive stuff, and then we get some very dry but very important parts of this timeline that they're constantly... Yeah. trying to get the jury to understand the order in which all of these things occurred and how they are connected to one another.
Yeah. You're right, Dawn. It is a belligerent turd circus. We've kind of forgotten that phrase. And it's a good one. We've
been calling it that for years. Yeah.
Yeah. That is straight up what it is.
Is that the same Joe as who called 911 for Tammy's over the driveway incident? Yes, yeah. It is. He and Emma lived across the street at the time that happened. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, we've been calling it a belligerent turd circus from day one. It was a lot more of that when Mark Means was still on the scale. Man, you just never knew what was going to happen. But then John Pryor really kind of has taken over in his place at this point.
He has, but man, Mark, oh. We miss you, Mark.
Right. And I think that you're right, that Julie Rowe thought that she'd be the one with Chad till Lori showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's been a lot of indication of that.
Why? Why did any of you ladies
want this? What is the draw? Food? We watch him sit there in court every day. Has anybody got the hots for him yet? I don't think so.
No. Yeah. Thank you, Carrie. We appreciate it a lot. And definitely yes, any of you really guys, if you go to court, we really appreciate your insight.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I don't know, Eternity, because he is not saying shit on Twitter. I've been stalking
him. He has a gag order. He's not allowed to speak about this case. He was told that when he was kicked off from it.
Well, he still has, though, clear up until, like, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And then he has not said a single thing. Yeah.
But during the trial, I don't think he'll dare. But we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah. It's true. Tammy was beautiful. It's true. And it's like, I agree with you, TJ. It's gross that we all kind of do this. Well, we had this beautiful Lori. Well, Tammy was beautiful. And Tammy was a great mom. And
Tammy didn't worship him because she knew who he really was. Yeah.
And Tammy was old news. She wasn't exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she just didn't buy his hype the way that Lori did. You know, she was going, I'm not so sure that you're the prophet. You know, I just don't think she bought in the same way he did. Or that she did. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap this up because we're going to be back at 8:15 Mountain.
Yes.
For the watch party. Katie, do you want to remind us what the...
So we're watching Unlocked on Netflix. It's called... There's more than one Unlocked, so you need to have the whole name, which is Unlocked, a Jail Experiment. And we are watching episode one. So as long as you are a member of our YouTube membership, you should already have seen a notification for that. But that'll start live streaming at 8:15. We usually wait a couple of minutes to get everybody in the room. And then we'll do a little,
synchronize their remotes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And push, ready, go. And then
we'll watch it together and chat. Yep.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, we appreciate you all so very much. Thank you for joining us live, joining us after the fact. On YouTube, on Spotify, Apple, wherever you are, we appreciate you all so very much. And you know what? We are the True Crime Squad.
Take care.